She wasn't a high-ranking spook. No rank insignia. No combat medals. Just a mid-level CIA analyst. Brilliant, disciplined, fluent in Russian and Farsi, with a knack for detecting narrative inconsistencies buried in source reports. We'll call her Sarah. Her task that day was to help vet intelligence for the upcoming intelligence community assessment, a rare high-level document drafted when the stakes are global. Only this time, the stakes weren't foreign, they were domestic. Sarah had been following the threads, bits of human intel, NSA intercepts, unconfirmed reports bubbling up from foreign stations. Some data pointed to Russian meddling. Fair enough. Moscow had always played dirty in the digital sphere. But then came something different. A series of memos, almost like gossip, dressed in spy clothes. No sourcing, no traceability. Wild claims. Russian compromat. Secret meetings. P-tapes. She asked, "Where's this coming from?" A senior officer leaned in and whispered, "The Steele dossier." That name alone made Sarah uneasy. She knew it had been passed around Washington like a hot potato, uncorroborated, funded by political operatives, and already flagged by internal reviewers. Some in the building called it fan fiction. Others called it too explosive to ignore. So Sarah did what good analysts are trained to do. She raised the red flag. Quote, "We can't include this. It's raw, unverified, politically compromised. We don't even know if Steele's sources exist." But her concern wasn't logged in any official review. It didn't make it into the footnotes. She never even got a reply email. The next day, the memo returned. Only now it was rewritten with the Steele dossier content embedded, not sourced. It had been laundered. The explosive claims were repackaged as intelligence community confidence. Sarah was told to stand down. A quiet reassignment followed. Her next project had nothing to do with Russia, or elections, or anything remotely visible. By January, her badge no longer scanned in the Joint Analysis Center. She didn't make noise. She didn't leak to the press. She just watched. And 1 month later, she saw what her work had become. A nationally televised intelligence assessment. CNN, MSNBC, Fox, wall-to-wall coverage. Anchors repeating claims she knew weren't vetted. Officials citing conclusions she knew were forced. And then came the leaks. Every network, every newspaper, pushed forward the very same figures who told her to keep quiet. She sat alone in her apartment, watching the world unravel. One manipulated headline at a time. No paper trail, no whistleblower hotline, no justice. Only this feeling. They didn't just bend the truth, they manufactured it. Because what if that wasn't fiction? What if it's happening again? And this time, someone on the inside just confirmed it. Hey folks, before we dive deeper, quick favor please. If you want more stories like this, the kind that slip through the cracks and barely survive the algorithm, please help me by subscribing. No fluff, no sponsors, just weird truths most channels won't touch. All right, back into it. In 1975, the United States government finally admitted what millions had long suspected. The CIA had been spying on Americans. They weren't just eavesdropping. They were planting disinformation, infiltrating protests, blackmailing journalists, and using psychological warfare tactics against U.S. citizens. And none of it was a conspiracy theory. It was confirmed in the open. They called it COINTELPRO. Operation Chaos, Operation Mockingbird. Not rogue agents, not accidents. These were official policies, approved, budgeted, and hidden in plain sight. Now fast forward to 2025. and a former CIA operations officer has just accused his own boss, ex-CIA Director John Brennan, of doing it again. But this time, the weapon wasn't wiretaps or poison darts. It was the truth itself, bent, filtered, and repackaged to serve an agenda. According to Brian Dean Wright, Brennan inserted unverified political opposition research into one of the most powerful intelligence documents in the U.S. history, and then rushed it out just before presidential transition. The goal wasn't security, it was sabotage. He's not speculating, he was there. And if what he's saying is true, then the most dangerous threat to democracy didn't come from a foreign power. It came from inside the House. So here's the real question. What happens when the people we trust to protect the truth decide to weaponize it? So let me say this right up front. I don't care who you voted for. I'm not here to push one party or defend the other. I keep my politics private. Always have, always will. Because this channel isn't about red versus blue. It's about truth versus noise. So when a former CIA operations officer publicly accuses his old boss, John Brennan, the former director of the CIA, of manipulating intelligence to sabotage a sitting president, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. That should rattle you. Brian Dean Wright isn't some anonymous whistleblower hiding behind a screen name. He's a trained CIA insider who worked human intelligence operations, boots on the ground, real field work. And he just went on record claiming Brennan staged what amounts to an intelligence coup. The claim is this. In 2017, while the country was still reeling from the election, Brennan allegedly took politically funded opposition research, the infamous Steele dossier, and injected it into an official intelligence community assessment. That report was supposed to represent the combined judgment of all 17 intelligence agencies, but Wright says that's not what happened. According to him, Brennan bypassed standard procedures, cut other agencies out of the drafting process, and rushed the ICA to release before Trump even stepped into office. Why the rush? Because once that assessment dropped, it gave every news outlet in the country permission to run wild. Suddenly, speculation became headline. Allegation became confirmation. The dossier became high confidence intelligence. And here's the kicker. None of it was verified. None of it had gone through the vetting channels that real intelligence is supposed to pass through. And yet, it was treated as gospel by politicians, pundits, and the public. So if this is true, and we're going to dig into the receipts, then Brennan didn't just influence public perception, he managed it. He steered the entire country into a psychological battlefield using fear, media leaks, and classified briefings as weapons. And the most terrifying part, this might not be the first time. All right, so let's rewind the tape for a second. Because if we're going to understand what Brennan is being accused of, we need to understand the weapon he allegedly used. It's called the ICA, short for Intelligence Community Assessment. Now, this isn't just some internal memo. An ICA is a big deal. It's the U.S. intelligence community's version of a nuclear press release. When an ICA drops, it means the 17 intelligence agencies under the ODNI, yep, all of them, are supposedly speaking with one voice. It's supposed to represent their best, most vetted, most agreed upon conclusions. This isn't gossip. This isn't speculation. It's supposed to be the truth, straight from the top. ICAs shape elections. They justify military actions. They influence public trust. And when you slap the words high confidence on an ICA, it's like giving the media a loaded weapon. Which brings us to January 6th of 2017. That's the day the ICA titled Assessing Russian Activities and Intentions in Recent U.S. Elections was released to both the incoming and outgoing administrations, and partially declassified for public consumption. It landed like a bomb. The report claimed, with what it called high confidence, that Vladimir Putin had personally ordered an influence campaign to undermine Hillary Clinton, boost Donald Trump, and destabilize American democracy. It even suggested that Russian state media, Twitter bots, and leaks were part of a coordinated effort. But buried deeper in the report, and even more explosive, were references to a now infamous document that had started circulating in DC-backed channels months earlier. You might have heard it as the Steele dossier. So here's the short version. It started with a company called Fusion GPS, a private opposition research firm hired by a law firm connected to the DNC and the Clinton campaign. Fusion hired Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer with connections to Russian sources, to dig up dirt on Trump. What came back was a 35-page collection of salacious claims, secondhand allegations, and unverified rumors, none of which were ever corroborated by U.S. intelligence. At least, not in any traditional way. But that didn't stop it from getting legs. Somehow, this dossier ended up in the hands of top U.S. officials, despite being opposition research. And by late 2016, it wasn't just floating around cable news green rooms. It was being briefed to President Obama, President-elect Trump, and key members of Congress. And the people doing the briefing? John Brennan, James Clapper, and James Comey. The three men who ran the CIA, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and the FBI, respectively, at the time. The dossier itself wasn't officially included in the ICA. But let's be real here, it didn't need to be, because Brennan and Comey reportedly made sure the media knew it had informed the conclusions, that it was part of the mosaic. And here's where it gets sketchy. Within days of the ICA's release, BuzzFeed did something unthinkable. They published the entire Steele dossier raw, with a disclaimer saying none of it had been verified. CNN then ran a story that said Trump had been briefed on the dossier as if it were credible. Suddenly, every major outlet was running with it like it had been blessed by the entire intel community. But inside the building, analysts were panicking. According to whistleblowers, many didn't want the dossier anywhere near official assessments. They considered it political, unvetted, and dangerous. And yet, somehow, it became the beating heart of the Russian narrative. So let's pause for a second. We've got a political document funded by a presidential campaign. It gets funneled into high-level intelligence briefings. It makes its way into a national ICA, either directly or indirectly. Then it leaks. And suddenly, half the country is convinced the president was installed by the Kremlin before he ever took office. You don't have to like the guy to see the problem here. Because the Steele dossier wasn't intelligence, it was ammunition. And someone pulled the trigger. Alright, so enough setup. Let's get to the receipts. Because Brian Dean Wright didn't just rant on a podcast. He laid out a forensic case, point by point, against his former CIA boss, John Brennan. And what he's alleging isn't just political manipulation. It's narrative warfare carried out by one of the most powerful intelligence figures in American history. Let's break it down. Claim number one, Brennan inserted the Steele dossier into the intelligence process despite internal warnings. Wright says Brennan knew exactly where the dossier came from. He knew it was politically funded. He knew the sourcing was unverified, circular, and secondhand. And yet, he still elevated it. How? Not by stamping it on the front page, but by doing something far more subtle, integrating its themes, language, and conclusions into the narrative framework of the ICA. And here's the part that checks out. According to the Durham report, portions of the Steele reporting were included in the body of the ICA as support for the judgment that Putin favored Trump over Clinton. Durham adds, despite serious questions about its credibility, the Steele dossier was presented to the president-elect and incorporated into the broader election interference narrative. That's not a Reddit theory. That's from a special counsel appointed by the Justice Department. And it matches what Wright is saying almost word for word. Claim number two, Brennan cut other agencies out of the drafting process. Here's where things start to smell. An ICA is supposed to be a community product. All 17 agencies weigh in. They debate. They push back. That's the whole point. It's the checks and balances of the intelligence world. But in this case, according to a 2018 House Intelligence Committee memo, a small group of CIA analysts, led by Brennan, wrote the assessment with limited input from other agencies. The NSA and FBI were reportedly provided with minimal opportunity to independently verify or contest the conclusions. And buried in the ODNI declassified emails released through FOIA, there's this. The final ICA was primarily drafted by CIA personnel with minimal interagency coordination. NSA dissented on key judgments, but their dissent was footnoted, not incorporated. Translation? This wasn't a collaborative product. This was Brennan's shop pushing a predetermined narrative. Everyone else got handed the final cut. Claim number three, the ICA was rushed out the door before Trump took office. Let's go to the timeline. The election happens November 8, 2016. The dossier is briefed to Obama and Trump early January 2017. The ICA is released January 6, 2017. BuzzFeed drops the full dossier January 10th. Now here's the catch. According to the Senate Intelligence Committee report, Volume 4, analysts were pressured to complete a report in an atypically compressed time frame. One CIA officer anonymously cited in the report called the timeline aggressively short and politically risky. So why the rush? What was the strategic urgency to drop a half-vetted ICA on the doorstep of the incoming administration? Who benefits from that kind of pressure? Then we have claim number four. Brennan and Comey briefed over 200 people in the media and politics. This part is just staggering. According to House oversight records and verified by Judicial Watch FOIA requests, Brennan and Comey's teams gave over 200 classified briefings to members of Congress, think tanks, and select journalists between December of 2016 and February of 2017. Let that sink in. Two of the highest-ranking intelligence officials in America went on a pre-inauguration media tour under the umbrella of national security. Now, to be fair, some of those briefings were standard protocol. Transitions require continuity, but over 200? Including media figures from CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, and yes, even BuzzFeed? What kind of intelligence operation gives classified context to outlets days before a politically radioactive document goes public? Then we have claim number five. CIA analysts were pressured to conform. This one hits hard because it speaks to the human cost. Brian Dean Wright says analysts inside the CIA were privately warning this wasn't up to standard. The Steele material wasn't vetted. The conclusions were speculative. The process was being driven top down, and they were ignored. Multiple sources cited in the Durham report and corroborated in the internal ODNI emails describe what they called a culture of consensus enforcement. One line from a CIA email says, "Leadership believes the conclusions. Pushback is unwelcome." Pushback is unwelcome. That's not intelligence. That's a narrative. And here's where all the dots connect. You've got a politically funded document, funneled through intelligence briefings, laundered into public trust via rushed ICA, and broadcast through strategic briefings to every corner of the media ecosystem. This wasn't about discovering truth. This was about manufacturing belief. This wasn't about intelligence. It was about influence. Let's be real. If everything Brian Dean Wright says about Brennan is true, then this wasn't a one-time screw-up. It was just the latest chapter in a long playbook. Because the intelligence community has done this before, over and over. Different decades, same tactics. Start with COINTELPRO, an FBI operation that ran from the 1950s through the 70s. They didn't just monitor civil rights leaders. They used forged letters, media leaks, and fear campaigns to smear Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and anti-war groups. Destabilize the movement, divide the people, maintain control. Then there's Operation Mockingbird. Declassified CIA records show they placed dozens of agents inside major news outlets, reporters, editors, even publishers. Their job? Shape public opinion, control the narrative, and you know what they called it? Perception management. Now fast forward to Operation Northwoods, a 1962 Pentagon plan to stage false flag attacks on U.S. soil and blame them on Cuba. Hijackings, bombings, fake funerals, all proposed, all written down, all real, not conspiracy. Then there's Iraq, 2003. We were told Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. That was the justification for war. That intelligence turned out to be cherry-picked, politicized, and pushed by people who already had an agenda. So let's overlay this with Wright's accusations. The Steele dossier? That's COINTELPRO-level blackmail bait, dirt, leveraged through media. The classified briefings to journalists? That's straight out of the Mockingbird playbook, except now it's influencer-driven and cable news-fueled. And the ICA itself? Pushed out fast, with selective sourcing, timed for maximum political effect? That's psychological Northwoods. Not bombs, not bullets, just carefully shaped information dropped at just the right moment. The goal? Manufacture consent, or in this case, dissent. The tactics never died. They just updated the software. Now let's pull the curtain back a little further. Because what Brennan's accused of doing, bending intelligence to control belief, isn't some rogue tactic. It's built into modern national security strategy. In U.S. Army psychological operations manuals, the phrase you'll find over and over is perception management. The idea is simple. Shape how people interpret information before they can think critically about it. Not just enemies, anyone, citizens, journalists, even elected officials. And this isn't just Cold War stuff. This is now. In 2011, DARPA launched a program called Narrative Networks. And the goal was as sci-fi as it sounds. Decode how human beings absorb stories, and then weaponize that process. They called it neurological priming, story-based persuasion, and behavioral contagion. Their documents openly describe narratives as a form of cognitive programming. And here's the wild part. They weren't trying to hide it. According to official DARPA publications, I quote, "The stories we tell ourselves affect how we process information, how we judge credibility, and how we act under uncertainty." Translation? Get to the story first and you win the belief war, even if the facts come out later. Meanwhile, papers from MIT, RAND, and the Brookings Institution are all focused on the same concept, cognitive infrastructure. That's the web of media, culture, memory, and social reinforcement that forms your understanding of truth. It's not about facts. It's about the emotional scaffolding around facts. Which brings us back to the ICA. Because if what Brian Dean Wright is saying is true, then the January 6th assessment wasn't just an intel product. It was a narrative payload designed to hit early, hard, and everywhere. It front-loaded suspicion before evidence could settle. It told the public what to think before the facts were even sorted out. And that's the most dangerous kind of lie. The one that arrives first and wears a government badge. Because if you control the narrative before the truth arrives, you've already won. Now let's ask the question no one in the intel community ever wants to answer out loud. Was John Brennan acting to protect national security or to weaponize intelligence for political gain? Because that's the heart of it, isn't it? If Russia really was trying to interfere with the 2016 election, then yes, our response was warranted. But what Brian Dean Wright is alleging isn't about ignoring the threat. It's about how that threat was framed and why. So let's follow the trail. First, who leaked the Steele dossier? We know it was in the hands of top intel brass by early January 2017. We also know Brennan, Clapper, and Comey all briefed the incoming and outgoing presidents on it. That gave the press just enough oxygen to run with the story. CNN reported the briefings. BuzzFeed published the full dossier. And just like that, unverified opposition research became a national security narrative. Who greenlit those briefings? Who made sure that media outlets knew they had happened? And who stood to gain from the spectacle? According to the Durham report, Comey and Brennan were both aware of the dossier's sourcing and reliability issues. But instead of sidelining it, they amplified it. Durham writes, and I quote, "There was a lack of analytical rigor in relying on the Steele dossier. Senior officials did not exercise appropriate oversight." Now contrast that with the media coverage. CNN's headline? Intel chiefs presented Trump with claims of Russian efforts to compromise him. No mention that the claims were unverified. No mention of political funding. Just a wall of insinuation wrapped in official sounding language. And that framing worked. The Russiagate hysteria launched books, documentaries, fundraising campaigns, podcast empires, and entire TV lineups. Rachel Maddow became the highest paid anchor in MSNBC history during the peak of the Mueller probe. Adam Schiff became a household name. National security think tanks exploded in funding. Fear was profitable. Fear was powerful. And here's the part no one likes to talk about. Both parties used it. Yes, the Democrats ran hard with the narrative, but Republicans didn't exactly slam the brakes. Most either went silent or quietly used the hysteria to purge rivals, test loyalty, and push their own fundraising pipelines. No one stopped the train. Because the truth didn't sell, but the noise did. And that's the danger of disinformation in 2025. It doesn't have to be a total lie. Sometimes it's a half-truth, deployed at just the right time. At this point, you might be wondering, who exactly is Brian Dean Wright, and why should we take his word over John Brennan's? That's a fair question. Wright isn't some Twitter pundit or political grifter. He's a former CIA operations officer, which means he didn't sit behind a desk writing policy memos. He ran human intelligence assets, recruited informants, lived in foreign countries, worked the field. He was trained in deception, counter-deception, and understanding how narratives are built, because that's part of the job. After leaving the agency, Wright didn't rush into politics. In fact, for a long time, he barely spoke publicly. When he did, he was known for being critical of both parties. He slammed Bush-era neocons, Obama-era drone policies, and the national security state under Trump. That's part of what makes him hard to pin down. He's not carrying water for the right or the left. He's not selling merch. He's not running for office. And he's not trying to go viral. He's just someone who was there and decided he couldn't keep quiet anymore. Let's test his claims. When Wright says Brennan forced the Steele dossier into the ICA, the Durham report confirms it played a central role in shaping the Putin-favored Trump judgment. When he says other agencies were cut out of the ICA drafting process, old DNI declassified emails back him up, showing CIA analysts taking the lead with NSA objections buried in footnotes. When he says analysts were pressured to align with the narrative, internal testimony from the Senate Intel Committee's Russia report confirms multiple dissenting views were sidelined or minimized. He's not just making accusations, he's connecting dots that are backed by source documents, FOIA emails, sworn testimony, and official investigations. This isn't a guy with a theory. This is a guy who recognized the patterns because he used to help build them. He wasn't guessing, he was there. If Brian Dean Wright is telling the truth, and the receipts suggest he is, then the Brennan operation wasn't just an isolated abuse of power. It might be a glimpse into a much deeper culture inside U.S. intelligence. Some call it a soft coup mentality, not an armed takeover, but a mindset. One where unelected bureaucrats and agency heads believe they know best. That it's their job to steer democracy, especially when the voters get it wrong. And Wright isn't the only one sounding the alarm. Kevin Shipp, another former CIA officer, has claimed for years that the agency operates with two faces, the public, official CIA, and the embedded covert structure that manipulates from the shadows. Shipp says Brennan's era weaponized that inner network, especially through psychological operations and media influence. Then there's John Kiriakou, the CIA whistleblower who exposed the Bush-era torture program. Kiriakou was the only person to go to prison over that scandal. Not for torture, but for talking about it. He's since said the agency's real specialty isn't intelligence, it's narrative control. And that raises a hard question. Do agencies like the CIA and FBI still serve national security? Or are they managing public perception in the name of stability? Think about how often intel gets leaked, just in time to frame a moment. Think about how the same trusted sources always seem to feed the same newsrooms, the same stories at the same time. They call it disclosure control. Give just enough truth to gain trust, while hiding the real payload underneath. If the Brennan-led ICA was shaped, briefed, and deployed with that level of strategic intent, then maybe it wasn't an assessment at all. Maybe it was a controlled release, a psychological operation with just enough truth to carry the lie. And if this was just one operation, how many more never made the news? Let's zoom out, because this story, Brennan, the dossier, the ICA, doesn't exist in a vacuum. It fits into a much older, much more dangerous pattern. Back in the 1970s, America learned the hard way that its intelligence agencies had gone rogue. The Church Committee, led by Senator Frank Church, exposed decades of illegal surveillance, political manipulation, assassination plots, and media infiltration carried out by the CIA, FBI, and NSA. It wasn't fringe, it wasn't theory. It was confirmed on national television. And the result? A rare moment of accountability. The formation of FISA courts. The creation of Senate oversight. The belief, however brief, that the deep state could be restrained. Fast forward to now, and that belief is shattered. You've got John Brennan accused of manipulating intelligence to sway public opinion. You've got James Comey accused of leaking classified memos to prompt a special counsel investigation. And you've got zero real accountability. For years, people have warned about the rise of a so-called deep state. But the reality is more complicated and maybe more disturbing. Because it's not always a shadowy cabal pulling the strings. Sometimes it's just unchecked bureaucratic power. People who genuinely believe they're doing the right thing while quietly overriding democracy to protect it. That's what makes it dangerous, because it's not obvious, it's not dramatic, it's subtle, plausible, wrapped in national security language and redacted memos. And by the time anyone figures it out, the damage is done. That's why voices from both the left and the right, people like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, Rand Paul, and Tulsi Gabbard, have all called for a new church committee. Not a witch hunt, not a purge, but a reckoning. Because if agencies that answer to no one can shape elections, frame narratives, and bend reality through classified briefings, then it's not really democracy anymore. It's managed consent. So we don't need a revolution. We need sunlight and subpoenas. Let's slow down for a moment, because this story is not about defending a president. It's not about Trump or Brennan or Hillary or any of the usual tribal lines we're told to stand behind. It's about something bigger, something quieter. It's about truth, and whether it still matters in a world that's been carefully trained to forget what that even means. Because if the people tasked with guarding the truth, intelligence officials, analysts, journalists, can twist it into a weapon, then the line between reality and narrative isn't blurry, it's gone. What happens to a country when belief becomes more powerful than fact? When entire elections, wars, social movements, and identities are shaped not by what's true, but by what someone needs you to believe is true. It doesn't happen with bombs or tanks. It happens with briefings, with headlines, with careful, subtle manipulation of the public mind until you can't tell whether you arrived at a conclusion or were led to it. That's the part that sticks with you. Because if they can shape a national narrative to engineer public reaction about an election, a war, a virus, a threat, then the question becomes, what else have they shaped? What stories do you still carry that were never yours to begin with? What fears? What loyalties? What enemies? This isn't paranoia. It's pattern recognition. We live in a time where the illusion of choice is curated, where the line between information and programming is thin and intentional. Because if intelligence agencies operating without transparency, beyond accountability, can stage narratives to shape elections, then what can't they do? And if Brian Dean Wright is telling the truth, if Brennan and Comey really did bypass process, manipulate intelligence, and feed a nation a carefully engineered lie, then there's only one question left to ask. Why aren't they in prison? What you just watched is the kind of video the algorithm doesn't like. It's not sanitized. It's not bipartisan theater. It doesn't pick a side, because the truth doesn't need a party. But that's exactly why this kind of content gets buried, silenced, shadow banned. Because when you start pulling back the curtain on people like Brennan and Comey and start showing how deep the manipulation really goes, the system doesn't push that forward, it buries it. So if you want to help fight that, if you believe the truth still matters, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's not trending, then do the one thing that still works. Push all the buttons. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. Share this with someone who still believes democracy is worth defending. Because that's how you tell the algorithm this story matters. And if you want to go further, if you want to help us keep making videos that go where most won't, then join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/divergentfiles. Every dollar goes toward more research, deeper dives, and staying completely independent, so no advertiser, no sponsor, and no political machine gets to shape what we say here. We tell the truth, period. And if we don't tell these stories, no one else will. Thank you for showing up and sticking with us. Stay curious, stay safe, and remember that you are truly appreciated.